preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden and moan boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn.
Welcome to you on a 4th of July. 2018. This is James Kelso celebrating with you live from North Dakota. Joining us, Paul Fromm in Canada. Hi, Paul.
Hi, James.
And we'll hear a word from Paul in a moment about the significance of July 1st in the history of his great country and very relevant to ours. So, and we'll hear from you at 800-313-9443. Add your thoughts on this 4th of July. I just watched Donald Trump make his 4th of July greeting to the nation. Very, very nice, short presentation with the stunningly beautiful Melania standing right next to him in a blue, a very patriotic blue and white dress with the red sash, bow, and they were on the balcony of the White House and then descended down the steps hand in hand with military bands and all the fun of the 4th of July happening below them. So let us begin this 4th of July. Right after tonight's show, I will be taking my children down to the Red River, where we traditionally fire up our North Dakota fireworks. And we'll enjoy that. And I think we'll take our American flag off the front of our house, maybe, and carry us down to the river shore. And so that's in store for us tonight. Let us, Paul, before I forget in my absent-mindedness, let's talk about July 1st.
Yes, James, July 1st, of course, was for us our national holiday, Dominion Day. It was our 151st birthday since we gained independence in 1867. However, July the 1st is also the 102nd anniversary of the beginning of the Battle of the Somme. The Somme is a river in northern France. And on July 1st, 1916, the British and the French launched a massive attack on the German lines, and 1 unit of the British Army, the 36th Division, it was the Ulster Division, the Ulster Volunteers, went over the top, and they lost thousands of casualties. They were the only unit that broke through the five lines of trenches that the Germans had. A few soldiers made it through, and they flew the Red Hand of Ulster. The Ulster flag has a red hand on a white background, and the victory was very short-lived. They were fairly quickly driven back. No territory was gained at all. And on the one day, the British lost 20,000 people, 20,000 soldiers dead. And it was also a huge loss for what was then a British colony, but would become Canada's 10th province, Newfoundland. And Newfoundland probably had a population of maybe 100,000. And there were two regiments, and the second regiment went over the top. It's hard to believe, but three attacks had failed. The attacks began around 8 in the morning, and they were sent. The Royal Newfoundland Regiment was sent over the top at 9:15. The commanders were hearing that their ranks were being chewed to pieces, but they sent the Newfoundlanders over. The next day, out of 875 soldiers, only 67 could answer the roll call. Now, some had been wounded, but out of 875, over 300 were killed. And you have to put that in the context of a very, very small population base. In many villages and on many streets, there were widows and women who would never marry. Many of the eligible young men had been taken out of action, in 45 minutes on one morning. And people today have perhaps difficulty understanding the colossally horrible conditions of that war. There were perhaps 300 yards that lay between the British and the German lines. There'd be the part in the front would be their own territory, and then there'd be no man's land, and then beyond that there would be barbed wire protecting the German positions. And there'd been a massive artillery bombardment that had gone on for a week, which they thought, and the British commanders had been misinformed, had actually chopped up the barbed wire on the German side. Almost none of it actually was destroyed. And what happened is, the minute the soldiers they went over the top, the Germans could see them. And here you've got men actually marching, not even running, into machine gun fire. And they simply just swept the battlefield again and again and again and again with machine gun fire. It was actually a miracle that even a small number of the 36th Division from Ulster even made it to the German lines. And the artillery was, among other things, supposed to destroy the German trenches. Well, it wasn't long in that war before both sides recognized it was important, yes, not to build a straight trench.
Paul, I'm looking here as you give those incredible details of the Battle of the Somme, and I'm just reading an article on it myself here, parallel with you. The French call it the Bataille de la Somme, and the Germans call it the Schlacht an der Somme. And this is one of the bloodiest battles in human history. Just looking at the summary here, 3 million men fought in this battle. 3 million, and 1 million of them were killed or wounded.
Yeah, and this went on. This was just the first battle of the Somme. There were a number more, and when all was said and done, for the destruction of those million men, more on the Allied side than on the German, there was virtually no ground was gained, we are paying the price today.
And Paul,
destruction.
Yeah, and very much so. And remember, you mentioned no ground was gained. But what was lost, folks? What was lost, folks, is our entire morale, our esprit, our will to live. That's what was destroyed at the Battle of the Somme. And of course, the casualties I gave you there for the entire battle from July to November, the series of battles, the total. But folks, I think the Battle of the Somme, and we'll connect it to our own 4th of July here in America here in the course of today's show. The Battle of the Somme, to me, is the model of what's wrong with the white race. Or to put it another way, what's our problem? How did we get into the mess? Yes, we're paying the price today. How did we get into the mess that we're in today? And here's what I say. What does the Battle of the Somme clearly prove? It clearly demonstrates. It just smacks you right in the face. It's so huge that it's the thing you'll miss because it's so huge. Those 3 million men, all of them armed, all of them firing at each other, all of them, what is every single man in the Battle of the Somme attempting to do? Every single man is attempting to kill every other man on the other side. Yes. Every single man is trying to do that. I mean, just think about the various purposeful activities in your life, folks, things that you've done, wash your car, mow your yard, purposeful activities. Did you ever engage in an activity whose purpose was to kill every one of 1.5 million others who are engaged in the activity with you? No. But they did in those periods of months. And here's what it proves to me, beyond doubt, is that we, the white race, didn't then and don't now value ourselves correctly.
That's correct.
In order to engage in that, it's ipso facto, folks. If you manage to persuade 3 million of, and these are not just losers or people rounded up on the streets, those 3 million men that were fighting were the most fit in Britain and Germany and France. They were the smartest, the most fit, the strongest, the healthiest, unhealthy, weak, people who couldn't stand on their two legs. They weren't in that battle. People who didn't have their wits about them, who couldn't be trusted with a gun, they weren't in that battle. They were back home, free to reproduce, by the way, after the battle was over.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
That's many of these were the best and the brightest. And there was a book written in the middle of the First World War, and it's amazing that it was called War and the Breed. And it was written by former president of Harvard University, and he predicted that this form of warfare would have a colossally damaging effect on us as a breed. And he pointed out in that book that modern soldiers were often just 17, 18, 19. Many were not married. Almost none had children. And many would die childless. And he pointed out that, most of us have seen that movie, The 300, about the Spartans at Thermopylae. Those elite soldiers were not even allowed into those units unless they had produced at least two sons. What went on in the First War, and to a certain extent the Second, is people who had no children, in large measure, were fighting and dying. Now, not all, but along the same line, Dr. Roger Pearson brought out an edition of that War and the Breed about 20 years ago, and what he did in that edition was to put in pictures of good-looking racial types on the Allied side, on the British side, actually, and with a very short bio, and in almost every case, died without issue. They weren't married, or they were married, just got married, and they had. But so these really good types were basically wiped out of the gene pool, and the commanders, especially on the Allied side, were insane. They knew or should have known the colossal casualties they were taking, and they had no other. They had no other strategy other than, well, let's charge again.
Again, ipso facto, by that very fact, folks, they were demonstrating. I'll give you an example. Suppose I was a stamp collector when I was a kid. I had a really good stamp collection. If I'd kept it would be worth a lot of money today. Anyway, I sold it to take my first trip to Europe. And in one of the places I was most affected on that trip as a 17-year-old in Europe, Paul, was when I stood on the battlefield at Verdun. Uh-huh. And it's still eerie, folks. It's still haunting. when you realize that they've got some memorials there where the men who were buried by bomb shells are still there.
Yes.
They're still in the trench where they were buried alive by the bomb shell. And out of respect, they've been left there. And some of their bayonets are sticking out of the ground. But, folks, that was here in July 1st, 1916. Those men who, let me just connect it to my stamp collection. What if I had taken my stamp collection, which was so precious to me? It was my biggest asset, my best resource. I sold it to get the airplane tickets to Copenhagen. What if I had taken that collection out instead in the backyard, put it in the barbecue and lit it on fire? You'd say, that guy's nuts. Those are priceless stamps he's got in there. He spent years collecting them. He's burning it in the barbecue. The guy's a nut. Well, that's what we did, folks. We took something worth a lot more than rare stamps, these fine specimens that Paul just talked about, our future, our best, our brightest, our bravest, and we put them in the barbecue. That's what we did.
And then walked away. You know, there were people who had an inkling that this was coming. One of them was the author of War on the Breed, but Pat Buchanan quoted one of these people in his great book about Churchill being largely responsible for both world wars. And it was actually the Grand Admiral of the German fleet, Admiral Tirpitz, and he said, this was in the summer of 1914, if we go to war, this will be the end of the white race. Now,
that was Tirpitz who said that?
Yeah, Grand Admiral Tirpitz. This is amazing. He didn't make the final decision, but there were people who had a bad feeling about this. This wasn't the right thing to be doing, but
I want to read that. As soon as your show's over, Paul, I'm going to read up on Admiral Tirpitz. That's a very important quote.
Check out Buchanan's book. He has a couple.
Oh, is that The Unnecessary War?
Yeah, he has a couple of good quotes at the beginning of each chapter.
Yes, I have that book right here. Yeah, yeah. I've forgotten that quote is in there, so I'm going to pull my Unnecessary War off the shelf by Pat Buchanan, just one of his many incredibly great books. And let me tie this to another person who was prophetic at that time. In 1916, I'm trying to look up the month of publication here because it's kind of important. The Battle of the Somme on July 1st. In that same year, 1916, my seventh cousin, Madison Grant, published his book, The Passing of the Great Race, or The Racial Basis of European History.
Yeah.
In 1916. And so he was having that same, imagine it, folks, as bad as you think it is today, and it is, here he is, my cousin, The Passing of the Great Race. That's a pretty dire word there, The Passing of the Great Race. So he was seeing this coming for us based on what was it based on? What's the problem? Why would he say that we're about to extinguish ourselves? Why would Tirpitz say we're extinguishing ourselves? Why did Charles Lindbergh in November of 1937 say we're on the verge of a war that may end European civilization? He was speaking about deja vu all over again, World War I 2.0, which was World War II. Why were they saying this? Because we clearly, we're throwing our priceless stamp collection into the barbecue. Paul's making the point that it was the best and brightest who died. Another factor of the war was, folks, who died in greater numbers? It was our best men who were there in the trenches, but who got killed first? It was the officers.
Yes.
Who were the best of the best. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Make a Ford and a Chevy. It'll still last 10 years like they should. The best of the free life is still yet to come. The good times ain't over for good.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I've got to beware.
Hey, we're back, folks. Paul Brown, James Kelso here on 4th of July, 2018, talking about Canadian independence, American independence, talking also about something of transcendent importance, which is the Battle of the Somme in 1916. And I'm going to look up that Tirpitz quote about this being maybe the end of Western civilization.
No, he was more blunt, the white race.
The white race. Okay. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Wow.
You know, that's why the consistent approach of Dr. Tom Sunik, who comes from a very nationalistic group, the Croatians, who jealously had to fight for and regain their independence after the breakup of communist Yugoslavia. He's very clear about what is necessary. He says, we as Europeans, sure, it's great to be nationalistic, and we should be, but we have to develop a pan-European point of view. We simply cannot afford utterly narrow-minded nationalism. We have to survive as a race, as a people, and right. That's why I worry about this endless anti-Russian garbage that we keep hearing. You know, I mean, you wouldn't find a stronger anti-communist than me. But wake up. Communism's gone. Right. I mean, it's gone in the Soviet Union, in Russia. We can't afford a war with Russia on so many different levels.
And to put some detail into what Paul just said about Dr. Tom Sunik, who's one of the directors of the American Freedom Party, Tom will, when you listen to Tom, he has hours and hours of stories about how Croatia, and I won't even put in the specifics, but just name all the different peoples of the former Yugoslavia. So name Slovenes, name Slovaks, name Croats, name Bosnians, name Serbs, name Macedonians, name Montenegrins. All those, and then you can add more. All those different peoples have the most bizarre hatreds for each other, unsettled scores and animosities. And he said, we would think this is gone. He said, no, in 2018, it's still operative on the ground here in Zagreb where he lives. And we have to transcend this. We have to start, and of course, pan-Europeanism is a wonderful term for us intellectuals. And Paul, how did any of us intellectuals survive the slaughter of the Battle of the Somme? I was about to say when we talked about, you know, we were left with the dregs after that battle. Well, that's Paul, that's you and me.
the leaders that sold us out racially were the dregs. They were the ones who were born from people who did not fight in World War One or managed to survive.
But that's a scary thought, folks. Just think about it. I don't know anyone can ever ascertain this, but there is a possibility that some of the brains and character traits that were slaughtered in World War One and in other slaughters, like I'll go into that in a second, we may have lost some intellectual skills that people like Beethoven and Bach had that maybe we don't have anymore, or we have in such short supply that we're less capable today of what they accomplished. And and it is kind of noticeable. I don't really recall anybody in recent times producing something like Beethoven's Nine Symphonies. There's that 25-cent word, pan-Europeanism, which we intellectuals can use. But what I use here on the show is just more of a common word. And Tom Sunik loves to say that. He says, I like to think of, you know, the common man. That's a man who's got his head screwed in straight. And that is just the white family, just our European family. We have to start to have this feeling about ourselves and the 4th of, what better day to do it than the 4th of July, this feeling of family, that we belong to a family. And in that family are our Canadian brothers and sisters and all the other, all of our other peoples of the white race, and that we think of ourselves as a family. And as Paul just said, we don't let these people foster a feeling of resentment towards the second largest white family, the Russian, by the American, the largest family. That's an obvious divide and conquer tactic. Also, this nonsense of pitting the British against the French. I remember, Paul, when I was 17 years old and I was in Europe, I don't know if there was some, you know, foretaste for me of, you know, this thinking would not, I guess it had started to develop in me. The first serious essay I ever wrote in junior high, I actually wrote an essay in arguing that the American Civil War was insane. And that was when I was in the eighth grade. I wrote my first serious essay. And I said the 620,000, and now we know it was even more, who died needlessly. All of the many millions who died in World War One died needlessly. The many millions in World War II, many more millions, died needlessly. And and here on the 4th of July, let me introduce another thought that kind of connects the Canadian and American experiences. Even possibly, of course, the 4th of July, wonderful day to celebrate our independence. But I'm going to have a little bit of a dark color to that thought in just a moment right after this break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong part, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
Back, folks. We've got one caller holding on the line, Joe in Indiana. Joe, we'll get to you in just a moment. But speaking of the family, our family, I just, during the break, I looked up, like, for my, thinking for myself as family, I mentioned Madison Grant, who is my seventh cousin, and I thought to myself, okay, you know, you can't remember all this stuff. So I looked back up the family tree. What's my family connection to Madison Grant, who wrote The Passing of the Great Race in 1916, the year of the Battle of the Somme, a year in which America was not yet part of World War I, a year in which Charles Lindbergh Sr. was vehemently advocating to keep us out of that war. My relationship to Madison Grant, I looked it up, and I found out that when you're a cousin, you'll learn this when you get into Ancestry.com. What does it mean to be a cousin? Paul and I are probably cousins, but I don't know yet what the cousin relationship is. But when you're a cousin to someone, it means you share a grandparent. There's no other way to be a cousin. There is a blood connection from cousin to cousin through a grandparent. And so in my case with Madison Grant, my 10th great-grandfather is the Reverend John Thomas Beach, who was a Puritan. a pilgrim. And that is also, that is Madison Grant's ninth or eighth great-grandfather. But we share that great-grandfather, Reverend John Thomas Beach. One of his sons, again, looking at, look how this family tree goes. One of his sons, John Thomas Beach's sons, John, is my ninth great-grandfather. His brother, another son, Thomas, he is the great-grandfather of Madison Grant. So it's so personal, folks. These two guys were brothers. One begat Madison Grant. The other begat me. And the and then on down, you know, on down the family tree, Thomas begat on Madison Grant's side, Zophar, who begat Epaminondas, who begat Rachel. All of those are Beaches, folks. And then on my side, John begat Thomas, who begat Benjamin, who begat Enos Beach. Look at these biblical names, Paul.
Oh, wow.
Who begat Annas Beach. That would be a daughter, so the name washes out right there. But look how, in other words, if I were to be able to speak to Madison Grant today, between the two of us, we would share 11 ancestors named Beach between the two of us, and we would have that blood connection. And that's what we have to do. And one of the reasons I think Ancestry.com is one of the greatest pro-white websites in the world, unintentionally. I don't know that the founders of Ancestry.com had any intention of being a pro-white organization. But they are. And it goes along these lines. Science itself. What is the greatest pro-white institution of all? Science. Science itself. The truth. You know, and simply because the white race is an incredibly beautiful thing, objectively speaking, by any standard, by any measure. I'll propound a proposition here that I don't know who else has said this. The most beautiful thing in the universe is the white race. Think about that. Just kind of remember what I just said. Maybe write it down. The most beautiful thing, and it is a thing. What is a thing in science? A thing is something that has weight and can be measured. You know, that, you know, it light is refracted or, you know, reflected by it. The white race is the most beautiful thing in the universe. And then here's my challenge to everyone and anyone. If you want to disagree with that or offer an alternative, name me something as or more beautiful than the white race, to the white race. Name me something else that's as beautiful as or more beautiful than the white race. I've spent many years contemplating that question. I haven't come up with anything. And what was being destroyed, thrown on the barbecue at the Battle of the Somme? 3 million of the finest that we had created from our race. And so that's the defect, folks. And that's where I want to go. You know, when you listen to Kelso giving the why are we in this hole? And if you can't analyze a problem, you can't solve it. That's for sure. So I see viewing the problem as very, very key, very initial first key step. What's the problem? We undervalue ourselves. Now, there are other people that come up with other problems. For instance, I talk about it, you know, plenty on this show and so on. There are people who can cite folks like Franz Boas, who was Jewish, who came up with a school of anthropology utterly in opposition to that of my seventh cousin, Madison Grant. And that was the great, those two fought, Grant versus Boas. Those two men fought. And Boas, unfortunately, prevailed in the institutions. And Grant was vanquished. So is that a problem? Is Boas a problem and other people like him? Yes. Very much so a problem. But is that our big, big, big problem? Is that the number one problem? Is that the problem that if we solve that problem, whatever the solution might be, we'll be out of the woods? No, no. The problem is, and by the way, the reason Franz Boas had a chance to become the founder of anthropology in America, or let's say the leader, Madison Grant and others among my ancestors, much more founders of anthropology than Franz Boas, but they were displaced. Boas came in because the door was open. What do I mean by the door was open? We were not protecting ourselves. We didn't value the chair at Columbia or the chair at New York University. Or another of my cousins, Fairfield, he was the chairman at New York University. Those chairs, we let them go. The study of man, anthropology, shouldn't we reserve that chair to our own kind? You know, it's the study of us. Shouldn't we be kind of in charge of the study of us? I think so. Instead, we turned those chairs over to alien peoples.
Yeah.
I mean, how dumb can you get, folks? That's called leaving the door open. We did that. Now, and so did a bunch of Jewish guys run in and take advantage of that deal? Sure, of course they did. Well, they're pretty smart. So the that's the problem. That's the sine qua non. That's the problem we've got to solve, is the fact that we don't value ourselves. And one of the things that's beautiful about seeing that as the problem and also as the solution, remedying that, is that it does not contain any, what would you say, it doesn't contain any element that could be turned into fringe, a fringe categorization. In other words, loving ourselves. How can somebody excoriate us for loving ourselves, for loving our ancestors, for loving grandma and grandpa and great, 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 loving all those ancestors and being devoted to them and cherishing them, trying to preserve what they created and died for? No one can castigate us for that. On the other hand, if we get off on a rant where, well, you know, we got to just hate this guy Boaz. He did it to us, Boaz and his buddies. Now, what are we immediately called? We're immediately called, we're anti-Semites. Why? Because Boaz was a Jew. Well, I mean, the same thing happens if we blame, folks. There's no one in the United States who's less happy about the arrival of the Somalians than I am. Oh, trust you. Trust me. You won't find somebody less happy about it. But the Somalians that come into the United States, and I'll just use them as poster boys and girls for all these different peoples, they're coming in here in the same way that Franz Boas is a pretty smart cookie to take over as the chairman of a department. Hey, these people offered a free apartment, a car, a job, cash, U.S. citizenship for themselves and all of their descendants. Would you turn that down? Even if you were from Mars, if you had three eyes and six legs, would you turn that down? No, you'd be stupid to turn that down. So these people, so who's the problem here? The Somalians or the people who let them in? Well, the people who left the door open. That's the problem. So hating the Somalians is now, oh, now you're a racist. First, now you're an anti-Semite. Now you're a racist. No. Solve the problem of why is that damn door open? And what's beautiful about Donald Trump is he's saying, slam the door. Slam the door. We don't, well, we're full up. And that's, he's onto it, folks. He's onto the solution here on the 4th of July. And then I said I was going to put a little dark color on the 4th of July. And here's this. And I invite your comments. And we've got Joe in Indiana waiting. Joe, you're going to grow old waiting for me. I'm sorry. The 4th of July is not so great. Let's put it this way, folks. What faces you today on July 4th, 2018 is more important than what faced your ancestors on July 4th, 1776. You're in a much more important situation, and the battle you're fighting is much more important than the one that they declared in July 4th, 1776. Because on July 4th, 1776, our race was not even at stake, not even remotely. And what's the proof of that? Paul Fromm, right here. The Canadians. Did they ever fight the crown? No. Did they ever need to fight the crown? No. Are they pretty much as free as we are today, with the exception of the First Amendment? Yes, they are. They didn't. So, yeah, you know, the American Revolution, you know, and by the way, putting more dark color on it, a lot of really good people in the American colonies ended up in Nova Scotia and Newfoundland and Canada, who were driven out by our patriot ancestors. And that was not a glorious episode. These are good people who didn't want to fight King George III. And they could make a good case for not fighting, for not sacrificing their sons to fight King George III, who was running at the time, by the way. The British crown was the freest nation on earth. Would you agree, Paul?
I would, yes.
Yes. It was the most wonderful government on earth, better than France, better than Germany's multiple states, better than any other nation on the face of the earth. So our ancestors were complaining about things like the stamp tax. They call them the intolerable acts, which put like penny or less taxes on things like tea. But was that worth a revolutionary war? Yeah, those who disagreed had their houses burned and were driven off to Canada. And those might have been smarter people than the ones who burned, the ones whose houses were burned might have been smarter people than the ones who burned the houses. And they might have been better people as well. So think about that, because my point is not to impugn those people. We celebrate the 4th of July, but my point is to make folks, you're living at a 4th of July right now that's far more important than the one facing Jefferson and Franklin and Adams. And your decisions are far more consequential now, because today what's at stake is not something like a 1% tax on tea. What's at stake is the future of your children, the future of your whole race, what Tirpitz and Lindbergh were worrying about. And so this is, we are truly in a fight now for our lives, for the life of our race. It's, you could not live at a more dramatic moment, Paul.
And, you know, we have to be careful about allowing, you know, ethnic nationalism to lose sight of the big picture. Yes, we should be proud of ourselves and our people, but our particular ethnicity, but we must never again slaughter white people. I was editor of a conservative anti-communist newsletter in the late 80s and early, certainly late 60s and early 70s, and I never got as much mail as I did about an article that was talking about Eastern Europe. And in that article, the author mentioned the Ukrainian city of Lvov, L-V-O-V.
Yes.
So the letters I got, it's not Lvov, it was Lvov. And it's not Ukrainian, it's Russian. And another letter, no, it's not that, it's Lviv, and it's Polish. And somebody even wrote in, no, it's none of those, it's Belarusian. And the vacuum, well, I'm not going to subscribe ever again. I'm not dropping your publication. And it was actually a throwaway line. It wasn't even an article arguing that this city was actually Ukrainian as opposed to Russian or Polish or whatever. And I thought,
yeah. In fact, let me keep talking. I'm reaching over to get an article here. I'm leaving the microphone. Keep talking, Paul.
I really thought, you know, honestly, there are bigger fish to fry. All your countries, well, this is back in 1970, let's say, all your countries are now under alien communist rule. There's something more important.
Let me read. Charles Lindbergh wrote about exactly what you're talking about, Paul. This is the last paragraph of his incredible essay, Aviation, Geography, and Race, written in the November 1939 Reader's Digest. And this is my sort of like most important article ever. He says, with all the world around our borders, let us not commit racial suicide by internal conflict. Here's his last sentence. We must learn from Athens and Sparta. And remember, famously, folks, what did Athens and Sparta do with each other for centuries? They fought. They fought each other.
Fought and fought and slaughtered each other.
Yeah. We must learn from Athens and two great cities, two great peoples, two incredibly high-achieving peoples. We must learn from Athens and Sparta before all of Greece is lost. We must stop that fighting among ourselves. And in 1776, folks, who were we? What were your ancestors? What were my ancestors? The Beeches, Madison Grant's grandfather, his Beach grandfather, and my Beach grandfather, both Puritans there in Massachusetts. They were both British subjects, and they both thought of themselves as British subjects. If you'd asked them, what are you? They wouldn't have said, I'm an American. There was no America. They were subjects of the crown, just as Paul's ancestors were in Canada. And King George was their king. But they were ethnically, racially, they were Brits. They'd actually come from Devon. That's pretty British. And they were born in Devon, in fact, and died in Connecticut. both of my Beach ancestor and Madison Grant's, born in Devon, died in Connecticut as Puritans. So that was, Paul, that was not just Brits fighting Germans, let's say, or Brits fighting Frenchmen. That was Brits fighting Brits in our Civil War, or in our Revolutionary War. And the, but now let me, my gosh, I've kept, let me go back, go to our callers here.
Yeah.
Joe in Indiana. Joe, are you still breathing there? I apologize for making you wait.
Oh yeah, I'm still here, and I really I'm really enjoying tonight. I'm so glad I waited to go to this the fireworks party and listen to your program. You're making it well worth the time, and I hope you continue with this. This is so seminal. So
and Joe,
important.
Joe, it's going to be you. If you can hang on another minute, go through the break, and then the microphone is yours when the break ends.
Hi, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you one from Amazon.com. I just wanted you to know I saw my doctor and I laughed because he said, "I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it." I have been taking Extendivite. I had borderline high blood pressure, heart flutter, high cholesterol. I changed my diet and included Extendivite with an amazing turnaround for the better. A few months later, I had a doctor's appointment and took a stress test. I passed. No heart flutter. Blood pressure was perfect. My doctor even took me off my medicine. I thank you truly from the bottom of my heart. This stuff works, and I'm so grateful for Extendivite. Thank you, Justin G. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life
with Extendovite. We're back, folks. And we have a very special caller to whom I apologize for the wait. Joe in Indiana, really an extraordinary patriot. Joe, I wish I could be there with you as, with your family as you celebrate the 4th of July.
Oh, thank you. I wish you two were here too. We'd be talking all night. I'll be brief. There's so much to say, and I really hope you continue this dialogue, you know, with Paul and yourself, perhaps on a Sunday. to really expand it, but my two major, well, I got a bunch of points as you were talking. Donald Trump read that book, All Quiet on the Western Front, and he told Megyn Kelly that was his favorite book. When I was in high school, that was required reading. And when you read that book, in light of the, and after I'd read that book, when I got into college, I've told you in the past, I was part of an exchange program in Europe, mostly a lot of time in West and Eastern Germany, and I traveled throughout the East, and I used to tour battlefields and things like that. That's my personal interest. But I learned so much about him saying that All Quiet on the Western Front, you read that, and then you take it, and you know he knows a lot of history. And then when he met with Kim Jong-un, and I remember that reporter, there was a reporter from CNN that was giving him a hard time, and he kept saying, I did this, so your uncles and your brothers and your friends, so 30 million people wouldn't be involved in a nuclear war. So Donald Trump gets it. He totally gets it, and he's trying to avoid any more war between any of our nations, and he knows what the devastation would bring. And then to bring this to another point, you know, I'm sure you're aware the other day he took away the college requirements to put race in the forefront like Obama did. That 9 years of those colleges doing what they did under Obama, him, Obama threatening those colleges, has really devastated. I have relatives right now that for the last 9 years, you talk about medical school, law school, college, that had such a difficult time. We're talking about very bright people. And I'm not just my family, but I mean kids that we had master's degrees and incredible intellectual power, and they're being denied entrance over other minorities. There was a time when this whole business, stupid business, started in the 1970s. It was a small percentage of minorities. Now the minorities dominate the colleges, and the colleges are being given so much money by the government that it's ugly. You go to my former college campus of Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois. I was just sick. The construction, it's obscene. Look at Notre Dame, obscene with all the construction and the government money, and they just take more and more, and they chase our race away, and yet our race has to pay the price. But anyway, my point was Donald Trump, he's a genius. He's a genius. He knows what he's doing. You say this all the time on the program. He's doing it the right way. And I just want to let you finish the show, you and Paul. I'm just loving this show.
Joe, we've had two shows tonight, the Paul and James show and a better show, the Joe show. What you just said, yes, what you just said is the most eloquent thing spoken tonight. And I want you, if you get a chance to call me, I think I need some educating here because you're aware. I'm not aware of what Trump did to countermand what Obama was doing. I must be ignorant of some specifics.
Yeah, he took out the race as a legitimate criteria in deciding admissions. It's a huge, huge win for us.
Huge, oh my! Huge. I missed it.
It was worth every little. I can't tell you how many friends I've lost, and I mean, I was at a medical conference just this last week, and people are just giving us, anybody who supports Trump, a hard time. But it's worth it. It is so worth it for what he did with the college thing. That
okay,
was my gift when I back home.
Joe, after your 4th of July celebrations, give me a call and educate me, and we'll put it on. I'll put it front and center on the show tomorrow night.
Great. Take care. Good night, gentlemen. Good night.
Thanks to everybody. Happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th of July.
Happy 1st of July. Thank you, everybody, for being part of our family. See you tomorrow night. Don't stop
believing. Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.